inexplicable, the last unconquered kingdom. Since the dawn of time, every man has cowered in shame before that which he cannot comprehend. UFOs, the afterlife, the human subconscious, an elf. Now the time has come to answer the unanswerable, to dance into the abyss, to finally know the mind of God. That's where I come in. I'm Lionel Nimrod, inventor of the interstellar laser ray gun toy, and Mackay off of ABC TV's Star Ark. Come with me now into the swirling mists of human inadequacy. We have nothing to fear but fear itself, and of course monsters. Prepare to enter the realm of your worst nightmare, the dwelling place of fire-breathing devils, giant razor-toothed apes, werewolves, and the seven-haired woman. But are these terrors safely bounded by dream's flimsy fabric? Do monsters, UFOs, and fairies exist? Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World. And please welcome your navigators of the canals of confusion.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And they call me Richard Herring.
Hello and welcome once again to the Inexplicable World. Monsters. Some take the form of huge ants. Others are massive, misshapen squid lizards. One is a small worm. But they all capture, chain up, and fall in love with blonde women. Only to find that they're not sexually compatible and don't have any hobbies in common.
UFOs, they use the advanced technology of superior alien civilizations to fly billions of light years through space in order to land in the backyard of a farmer in America, knock at his window in Halloween masks, make a scary sort of noise, and then fly off again.
Fairies, they make their livings from selling unpleasant paste-filled sponge cakes at summer fetes. And despite always being careful to hide from all human eyes, did agree to pose for photos with some teenage Edwardian girls when they were a bit young and naive.
But are any of them actually real? And if so, why do they only appear to people who are mad or too stupid even to use a camera properly?
Let's start with a look through the archives for monsters from fact and fiction.
Yes, I saw something coming out of the loch, a big snaky head about 30 foot long, hissing with flippers. My husband said it was probably just a wild duck fighting.
Here is the footprint of the Bigfoot, which we saw just seconds ago.
Amazing. What was it like?
I've told you. It was literally a big, hairy foot. Cut off at the ankle. But with sharp toenails capable of skinning a mountain goat alive. It hopped in front of our party and in an instant was gone. Oh my God, the hairy beast is returning.
Call a chiropodist.
The elephant man! He's a monster!
I am not a monster. I am a human being. Now give me a bun or I'll squirt you with my trunk.
Yeah, if you can see on my video, the Sasquatch is coming down through the forest. He's approaching the tree line. He turns, sees the camera, and then, hey, look, he gets hit by the ball and falls in the pool.
Well, thanks, Roger.
Yeah, the monster just rose out of the loch, smashed our caravan to bits with its tail, and then seized our daughter Mary in its fangs and sped off into the water. Mind you, the ducks are a bit frisky in the spring. Or it could have just been a twig floating on the loch.
And our studio audience itself tonight is composed entirely of real-life half-human monsters and freaks. It's an horrific assault on all five senses, particularly smell.
Yes, in the front row here, for example, is a man so hideous that if this were a TV show, it would be unbroadcastable. Barely semi-human, he looks like some sort of weird creature that's been assembled from the discarded body parts of old Hollywood screen monsters.
All right, Steve, all right, lay off. That's my dad.
Oh, sorry.
He's down for the weekend and he just wanted to see the show. He's been having some problems with my mum, needed a bit of a break.
I'm sorry to hear that. Sorry, Keith. Although, looking at him, I'm not surprised, really. She's an attractive woman, your mum. She could do a lot better than old aardvark face there.
All right, Stu, lay off. That is an aardvark. My dad is next to the aardvark. In the jar.
Oh, sorry. So that's your dad, then? The amazing jarred man of Somerset?
Yes, he copes very well, then, considering.
Well, I wish you'd told me earlier. I've been dipping my crisps in him all day. It's interesting, though, because I put them in plain and they come out sort of prawn cocktail flavor. So, come with us now into the world of the dinosaurs, the first monsters of all. Bubbling volcanoes shoot liquid fire into the ravaged purple sky. Deadly showers of radioactive meteorites rain down on the crumbling earth. An unusual plant grows by a stone.
High in the mountains, a pterodactyl flies repeatedly into a window pane.
On the plain, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, blood dripping from its teeth, attacks a 2-inch Lego ambulance driver. Today, the Lego ambulance driver escapes. Tomorrow, he may not be so lucky.
And in the forest, the tribe of beautiful fur-clad savage women, led by Raquel Welch, rescue submarine commander Doug McClure from a man-eating bush.
Thanks, girls. Now, where is the crystal?
The scientists also tell us that the dinosaurs died out due to a meteor shower of diamonds from outer space. But, in fact, the dinosaurs died out due to pans of boiling hot fat falling off stoves, incorrectly wired plugs, and complications arising from a minor operation.
But what finally finished off the once proud dinosaur race was moral slackness. The inevitable effects of nest hopping, egg sucking, and the unsavory and unhygienic use of the Triceratops. And there's a message there for us, isn't there? The message is, have a good time now, because we're all going to die.
That's right, Stuart. But over here in this part of the studio, I've set up a powerful radio transmitter and receiver system, sending this show into outer space, in the hope of making contact here tonight with super intelligent aliens, who can answer at least one part of our question.
Yeah, once broadcast, all radio waves transmit out into space forever, where they can be received by aliens. Which is fantastic when you consider that most of Scotland can't even pick up Radio 4.
On faraway stars like Betelgeuse, the weekly satire show Weekending, unburdened by a topical news context to lend it any meaning, has taken on the status of high surrealist art.
Thus, the BBC have strict rules about what you can and can't say on radio. For example, we must never say, we Earthlings are the sworn enemies of all other life forms, and declare space war on every alien of any kind.
Shh, Stu, you're in trouble now. Taken out of context, that could start a terrible intergalactic space war, ending in the extinction of all life on Earth as we know it.
Oh, sorry, I didn't think. Now, as an attempt to impress the aliens, the NASA Voyager probe genuinely carries a recording of the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction, a tape of friendly greetings from disgraced Nazi Kurt Waldheim, and a film of a man and woman having sex.
Of course, those aren't the three best things on Earth. So I'm sending Right Said Fred's Deeply Dippy single, the Peter Shilton story video, and a film of a man and two women having sex.
The choices made by both NASA and Richard are pure subjectivity. So I'm broadcasting an objective choice of Earth's best cultural achievements to the aliens. These are the third REM album, a reading from Blake's Marriage of Heaven and Hell, and a blurred Polaroid photograph of me, naked, having sex on my own.
Well, we'll be back with the transmitter later to see if we've got any answers from lonely hearts out there in space.
Now, back on planet Earth, if the ancient Greeks are to be believed, then they had horrific snake-haired, bull-headed, one-eyed monsters around every corner. But remember, the Greeks are always lying to make themselves look better than they are.
That is true, Stuart. For example, Prince Philip is a Greek, and yet managed to fool the Queen into marrying him by pretending to be the Duke of Edinburgh.
But no lying Greek has ever sunk to the depths of dishonesty that Homer did. He sold the Acropolis to American tourists, married the Queen of England by pretending to be the Duke of Glasgow, and made a million drachma selling his screenplay Jason and the Argonauts to Ray Harryhausen. Stories such as the Cyclops, in reality, have much more humble origins.
Blown off course on his return from the Trojan Wars, Odysseus and his men arrived on the shore of the island of the Cyclops.
Hello, hello, hello there, Pui. Welcome, visitors, to my island. Oh, how rude of me. I am Cyclops, Ian Cyclops. And I live alone on this island. It is nice to have visitors.
By Zeus's beard, Orestheus, what a hideous one-eyed monster.
Yes, Odysseus, surely the freakish terror must plan to eat us, surely.
Oh, dear, I see you've noticed my patch. Yes, I had a cataract operation last month. There's been some complications. Anyway, would you all like tea?
By Jupiter's gland, he's forcing us into his cave. Such a frightening beast, we cannot resist.
Later, deep inside the Cyclops' lair.
Oh, don't mind my sheep. Sheepy. I let him live in the house. He is my only friend. You're all welcome to stay as long as you wish. I can blow up some lilos for the younger sailors. He is no trouble. Now, I think I've got some French fancies in the pantry. I shan't be a mo.
By Hippolyta's two breasts, this is our chance, Odysseus.
Yes, you, Tantalus, poke him in the eye with the cake fork, and we'll smash his tea set to bits. Grab his sheep. We can have some kebabs on the beach tonight.
Yeah, and salad.
Here are the fancies. They are Mr. Kipling, though. None of your taps. But I've only got yellow ones left. I hope you don't mind.
Get him!
Ah, my eye! What's happening? Oh,
come on,
let it go! Oh, I can't see. Well, I'd have bought some chocolate fancies if I'd known they'd be so upset.
And so Ian Cyclops, the Cyclops, became the legendary no-eyed monster, the scourge of travellers. Few lived to tell the tale of how he would bump into them and then apologise.
In our audience tonight, we have England's own modern-day Cyclops, the eccentric one-eyed right-wing astronomer, Patrick North. Patrick.
Hello. Despite being a Cyclops, I have become accepted by human society by taking up professions that only need one eye, looking through a telescope and playing the xylophone.
Medieval sailors reported seeing beautiful women in the sea, but it now seems likely that these mermaids were just large squid. Now, you might think that's an unlikely mistake to make, but without modern cosmetics and deodorants, most women do look and smell very like squid.
Yes, when I was going out with my old girlfriend, I often used to look across in the morning, you know, and go, oh, God, there's a squid in my bed! Ah! You know, then I'd wake up properly and I realised, oh, no, it's just Emma. Yeah.
What, Emma?
Yeah.
Well, Emma was a squid, Rich. We all thought you knew.
A squid? Well, that makes a lot of sense in retrospect, actually, yeah. But not all mermaids are squids by any stretch of the imagination. Oh, no. Earlier today, with the net, I captured Daryl Hannah, the mermaid star of the documentary film Splash, who we've sealed in this tank of water. Daryl, hello.
Let me out. There's no air in here.
What's wrong, Daryl? In Splash, the slightest contact with water caused your distinctive fish's tail to grow. Where is it now?
Madison the Mermaid is just a character I play in a film. I'm a serious Hollywood actress now. I'm not a fish. Get out of this tank. This has gone far enough.
You're not fooling anyone, Daryl. You tried to play tricks on the CIA, didn't you, in Splash? But I've caught you, and by mermaid law, you are now my slave to do with what I will.
Please, let me out. I've been in here for hours.
Even as we speak, Daryl, I'm entering negotiations to stage the Daryl Hannah Touring Aqua Show. Come on, jump up out of the water and catch this fish. Come on, jump, come on.
I can't.
hurry up or it's Captain Birdseye being... Daryl? Daryl? Stuart, she's floating upside down on top of the water.
Yeah, well, I told you shouldn't overfeed her with all that flaky stuff. You have to flush her down the toilet now. Any more fish in the sea, I suppose?
I'm back in our audience to meet some more of the disgusting freaks we've invited along tonight. Nigel Simcock of Hereford. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you think you're a werewolf, don't you?
No, not anymore, no. I found out that I'm just hopelessly and incurably insane. So when I wake up in the morning covered in blood in a wolf's cage in the zoo and the newspapers are full of stories of violent murders by a sort of wolf man, I don't have to worry.
Have you ever seen the film An American Werewolf in London, Nigel?
No, I try to avoid that sort of thing. It gets me a bit funny.
You know. You should watch it, actually. It's a bit in the shower with Jenny Agutter. And you use your pause button and sort of squint. Right. It leads very little to the imagination. So, good. Well,
Our next monster is perhaps the most hideous of all and is yet all too real. Stand up, please. This is Amanda Salisbury, a nursing student from Highbury in North London. Amanda, I believe that you have ginger hair.
No, I don't.
You do, Amanda. We can all see it. The hair is clearly ginger.
No, it's russet.
It's ginger. No, it is ginger.
Cherry blonde.
The hair is ginger.
No, really, it's a kind of autumn yellow.
Thank you, Amanda. Sit down.
But there is one monstrous affliction that can cause more pain, distress and embarrassment than even ginger hair. Vampirism. Here's Wendy Leafley.
If you were to see two figures with sharp, bloody fangs walking down your high street, you'd be scared out of your wits. But here in Solihull in the West Midlands, it's an everyday occurrence. The local residents Tina and Adam Atwood are modern-day vampires.
Yeah, well, we've been vampires for about 4 years now. You know, we dress in black, sleep in coffins, we're nocturnal. But we don't kill and drink the blood of unwilling virgins. No, I don't think the burghers of Solihull would appreciate that.
No, but luckily Adam and I have a very supportive network of neighbours and friends.
Adam, Tina, come in. I'm glad you got here so soon. I was cutting my nostril hair and the scissors sort of slipped.
Oh, yeah, that is a nasty gash.
Yeah, I've been trying to bleed into this bowl for you.
Good supply there. I'd better go home and get one of our Tupperware boxes. You stay here, Adam, and feast on the wound.
Right.
We do get a lot of crank calls, yes, from people who've cut themselves in unusual places.
Yeah, and a lot of the cuts, well, they don't look like accidents to me. But we're obliged, really, as vampires, to have a bit of a suck anyway.
But local parish priest Canon Raymond Van Halen is not satisfied.
Yes, to all intents and purposes, the Atwoods do no harm, and they are very, very nice. Adam Atwood is a member of the Solihull Lions, and his wife Tina is a voluntary swimming teacher. But obviously, as parish priest, it is my duty to nail huge wooden stakes through their hearts until they die screaming and writhing in the agony and pain of iniquity. It's an unpleasant duty. I much prefer christenings.
I'm back at the transmitter, which is still sending every word we say out into space. There's been no replies yet, although Ian from Stockwell has been through on his CB radio asking if we know anyone else that has still got a CB radio. The magical elven fairy music leads us away from outer space and monsters into the hidden land of the pixie folk, where a toadstool is the gnome's perch, goblins go about their goblin tasks, and elves steal one of each pair of Ben Elton's socks from a laundress. Again.
Now, like Dragonslaying, European fairy myth has a socio-sexual undercurrent. Male protagonists tend to be seduced by beautiful fairies, while female characters must repel the unwanted attentions of ugly dwarves. Women who visited continental Europe can testify that this experience still rings true today.
In the original Snow White myth, Snow White slept with all the dwarves in return for food and shelter. All that has survived into the modern version is the dwarves' song. Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. Also in our audience tonight is Mrs. Roddy, who believes that her four-year-old child, Victoria, has been stolen by elves and replaced with a fairy changeling.
Now, why do you think that, Mrs. Roddy?
Well, one morning last month, Victoria began acting in a changeling-type way. She developed an outrageous appetite, a foul bad temper, and had fits of squealing and howling.
Yeah, that sounds like the typical unpleasant behaviour of any normal four-year-old child to me.
Yes, but she also changed from being a small blonde-haired girl into a wrinkle-skinned, swollen-headed, ugly dwarf with a long white beard and strange bright ebony eyes.
Yes, Victoria does look a little peculiar. I didn't want to say, you know, most little girls go through a tomboy stage after all. I've got away with children, I think. Hello there, Victoria.
Your mother sucks rocks in hell.
Oh, dear.
Don't worry, Mrs. Roddy. All Victoria needs is a bit of a smack.
Just try it, melon farmer.
But tonight, Mrs. Roddy is going to try and bring back the daughter she knew and loved by cheating the changeling.
Yes. According to Nancy Arrowsmith's book, A Field Guide to the Little People, published by PAM, 1977, the most civilized way to get rid of changelings is to make them reveal their age, and thus their true identity.
Now, this should be done, apparently, says Nancy Arrowsmith, by pretending to brew beer or cook a meal in a small eggshell. This will so fascinate the changeling that they will cry out, I am X years old, but I've never seen anything like that before. And it's as easy as that.
So let's give it a try. Mrs. Roddy, here is your small eggshell. Off you go. Let's see if the changeling reveals its age.
Look at me, Victoria. I'm cooking a meal in a small eggshell.
Why don't you just use a pan, you stupid old hag?
You're meant to give your age away, Victoria.
Look, I know the bloody score here. As long as I don't tell you how old I am, I'm laughing. I'm hard to remember that, tossers.
Sorry, Mrs. Roddy, we did try.
Hold on, it's not over yet. Victoria.
What? No, felt face.
I was going to go and see Basic Instinct again tonight, with all its male and female full frontal nudity, homophobia and ice pick murders. But it's an 18 certificate, and as you're a four-year-old girl, you won't be able to come with me, will you?
I will. I'm not four. I'm a 137-year-old gnome. Ah! Oops. Bum.
Look, the gnome has gone. Victoria has returned.
Oh, Mummy, I love you.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, great. Who's going to come and see Basic Instinct with me now? I mean, it's not the sort of thing you can take one of your left-wing graduate friends to, is it? Me and that gnome could have really had something there. Thanks a lot.
Never mind, Stuart. There are plenty more gnomes in the sea. But is it possible that fairy folk and other monsters are visitors from outer space, stranded on our planet?
Well, it's possible, but no, they aren't. But has extraterrestrial life visited our planet? Ted Wilding White's seminal work, Mysteries of the Unknown, Monsters, Ghosts and UFOs, Osborne 1977, speculates that aliens may already have invaded. Perhaps.
Ha ha ha! We are evil aliens from the outer space, sent by our alien overlords to destroy the world and make Earthlings bow to our alien power.
Hold on, Farquhar. Why do you keep referring to us as aliens? Surely from our point of view, it's the Earthlings who are the aliens, not us. We are the norm in our mindset. The term alien suggests an otherness.
Silence, alien! You are an alien! A hideous-faced, ugly space alien from outer space!
I reject that. To be quite honest, I'm considered handsome by other aliens. And we're not from outer space. Surely to us, this is our...
Shut up, alien! Prepare to attack the world, alien.
No! No, I won't! Not if you keep calling me that. My name's Simon. Simon Harris.
All right. Prepare to attack the world, Simon.
Mr. Harris to you, thank you.
All right. Mr. Harris. We must destroy the world!
Oh, can't we just land in the desert, kidnap some bloke, cover him in strange markings by giving him a Chinese burn and a love bite? Could he watch forward 4 hours and then dump him in some nettles, like last time?
All right! But next time we destroy it properly!
Well, thanks to Ted Wilding White and Mysteries of the Unknown, Monsters, Ghosts and UFOs, published by Osborne, 1977.
And now, over to Peter Fenn for our weekly Peter Fenn's Hammond Organ Believe It or Not file.
Believe it or not, at breakfast time in the Fenn household, UFO stands for Unidentified Frying Object. At least when my son Ian is doing the cooking. No, that was just my little joke. Believe it or not, if you were attacked by a Chinese dragon, you needn't be afraid. For a Chinese dragon is simply a tissue paper canopy containing 12 Chinese people who can easily be dispatched with a lance. Or gun.
Thank you, Peter. And what tune were you playing on the organ this week, I wonder?
It was Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful Balloon.
By?
That was penned by Webb. Beautiful balloon, beautiful tune.
Well, that means we've come to the end. Obviously, this week our conclusion must be that all sightings of aliens, elves and monsters are examples of our limited sensory powers, trying to organise the presence of something we can't make sense of into forms that we can. Perhaps the presence of a benign higher intelligence.
Shut up, Stuart! There's something coming through on the receiver.
Calling Earth, we are aliens from outer space. We have your message.
Ace!
We Earthlings are the sworn enemies of all other life forms and declare space war on every alien of any kind.
Your threats are foolish. You have no chance against our superior alien weaponry.
No, that's not it. You've taken it out of context.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Fortunately for your planet, we are going to spare you because we enjoyed Richard's video of a man and two women having sex so much.
You. Well, who'd have thought that naughty nun Nina's Nantucket Nights would be responsible for saving the planet Earth? But wait, can you tell us, from your observation, alien, do monsters, UFOs and fairies exist?
Yes, they do, all of them. Every single monster you can think of is literally real, even one with the head of an otter, the body of an ant and the legs of a stork. All of them. Oh, apart from the Loch Ness Monster, which is just a wild duck. Goodbye, Earthlings.
Goodbye.
Well, thanks to the alien for sorting that out. It's a shame he didn't think to use his superior knowledge to advise us on the Earth's energy crisis. Incurable disease is an imminent environmental catastrophe. But never mind.
Yes, at least we need never be scared to swim in Loch Ness again. Until next week, then. Goodbye.
So the nightmare is ended. Return to your humdrum life. And, friend, tonight, as you lay down to bed and the clammy darkness envelops your feeble body, consider, where have all the monsters gone? Perhaps they've been scared off by the most grotesque monster of all, the monster we call man. Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again next week for another adventure into my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World featured Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, Rebecca Front and Armando Iannucci, with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee and produced by Changeling Child, Sarah Smith.